Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
And we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show as we are quickly cruising through the month of February, the 2013 National Signing Day. It has come and gone. Last week, we highlighted the Big Ten Conference. Now it is time to turn our attention to the Big 12. And the Oklahoma Sooners, I think they closed strong with a late surge. Probably their top three players, the crown jewel of the recruiting class, Keith Ford, a five-star prospect, DJ Ward coming out of Moore, Oklahoma, and Cody Thomas. And we're going to hit on those guys here momentarily, but I think the biggest headline coming out of Norman, Oklahoma this week is that head coach Bob Stoops, he dismissed three of his coaches. And so providing the scoop for us today is a gentleman that is always synonymous covering Oklahoma sports. That is the great Bob Berry Jr. And Bobby, it's great to have you on the program.
How are you, E?
Always doing great when I have an opportunity to catch up with you and get the pulse on my Oklahoma Sooners. And this is so interesting because, you know, Bob Stoops, as you look at his record, I mean, 13 seasons as a coach, I mean, he's never fired an assistant throughout those 13 years, and he eliminated three this past week.
Yeah, you know, actually, E, that totals up to five in the last 2 years. So he's there for 13 seasons, doesn't do anything, really kind of a loyal together staff, kind of like Barry Switzer did it, who had the same assistants forever. And now in his 14th season, he launched a guy named Willie Martinez, who was a secondary coach, the first guy he's ever fired before the start of his 14th season. But he also fired Brent Venables, if truth be known, his longtime buddy and defensive coordinator. He sent him on his way, and that's why Venables went to Clemson. So he fired two before his 14th season. Now heading into his 15th season in Norman, he fires three in 1 week. He told James Patton to go, and James Patton was out of work for like, what does Rob Ryan say? Out of work for like 5 minutes, and Patton got hired by Kevin Wilson at Indiana. Of course, Kevin was Oklahoma's former offensive line coach and offensive coordinator, so Patton lands on his feet. Then Jackie Shipp was probably the surprise to fans because he was on the original staff with Bob in 1999 as a defensive line coach, the former Sooners linebacker. He got sent on his way this week. And then Bruce Kittle, probably no surprise, very close personal friend of Bob. But he had a really strange resume for a coach. I mean, the guy's been a lawyer. He's been a pastor. He's done prison work with inmates. I mean, he's done all this stuff. But the one thing he didn't have on his resume was coaching a football team or even as a position coach. And Bob hired him as kind of a quality control guy for a season or so and then put him into a position coach as an offensive line assistant and tight ends coach. And it just didn't work out. Bruce didn't sign anybody. He didn't do much on-field coaching, I was told it was a really tough decision for Stoops because they're so close personally. So anyway, five guys now let go in 2 years, and that validates what we said, Elissa, after the Cotton Bowl, when everybody said, hey, Texas A&M just drubbed them. They were three plays away from losing to Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and TCU, and we all thought it was a really, really poor finish to a 10-3 year. Bob Stoops vehemently disagreed with us after the Cotton Bowl, but now he's proven that he agreed with us by getting rid of these assistant coaches this week. So I think he obviously realized there had to be changes made in Norman, and now he's got a bunch of them.
Well, Bob Stoops, it seems like that he is working hard to get his Sooners back on track. Another season without a national championship, making some drastic moves. Who are some of the names emerging in terms of that will fill those slots? I mean, I've even heard Mangino potentially returning.
Very interesting, because Mark Mangino has been on record as telling friends of his that he had already, you know, he was telling people, I'm going back to Oklahoma. I will have a job there. And then I was told by a source about a week ago that he would not be hired as the offensive line coach, but this was before Bruce Kittle got fired, who was also an offensive line assistant. So now there's two openings across that offensive line, and I was kind of led to believe today that Mark Mangino might indeed be hired, and it might not be as an offensive line coach. He might come in as a tight end coach. You don't have to come in, you know, in the position that you previously held. James Patton proves that by leaving the OU staff as an offensive line coach, and Kevin Wilson hired him as a defensive line coach at Indiana. So now I'm being led to believe that Mark Mangino might indeed be rehired on this staff where he used to be. We hear the name Bill Beedenbow, who is an assistant. He's an offensive line coach for Dana Holgorsen at West Virginia right now.
Oh, yeah.
And Beedenbow has a lot of connections to these guys at OU. He coached under Mike Stoops at Arizona, and he coached under Mike Leach at Texas Tech. So that would make sense, and he's said to be a very good recruiter. As far as defensive line coach, really haven't heard too many names. There's a guy that used to play at OU that you probably heard of. He left the name Calvin Thibodeau, and he's been making his way through the coaching ranks. He has been at four schools in the last 4 years, most recently Tulsa. He's done a great job for Bill Blankenship this year. He was at Houston under Kevin Sumlin a couple of years ago. So people are floating Calvin's name out there. Maybe it's kind of a wishful thing, hoping that Bob Stoops will take notice and hire him. But that's one name we've heard. And then another guy, Mike, I can't ever say it, Tuiasapopo, you know, same name as the guy who was involved in the Manti Te'o. You know, who knows if they're related or whatever. This guy, Tuiasapopo, coached at Arizona, also under Mike Stoops, and for a time was at Colorado after his days at Arizona. And those are the only two names we've even remotely heard for this defensive line assistant job. But we, you know, who knows? But it just seems to me, with spring practice starting in 3 weeks, Bob Stoops needs to make these decisions pretty quickly, because it's, you know, he's got a lot of questions to be answered in spring.
Bob Berry Jr. is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. Bobby, of course, is with the Sports Animal out of Oklahoma City, also KFOR Television. And we're talking about some of the changes in terms of with the coaches. But also, I understand that Coach Stoops is going to open up the playbook, perhaps some defensive changes on the horizon.
Supposedly going to a 3-4 base defense, and that would maybe be more in line with what Mike Stoops wants to do. I tell you, what it all comes down to, E, at least it appears to us media types that follow this program, is that Bob is really relying on Mike, his brother, to kind of get a grasp on what the heck's going on. And everybody in Sooner Nation thought when Mike Stoops came in last year in place of Brent Venables, oh, he'll be the savior, this will be it, this will be the return to the glory days of Tony Kostas and Brian Bosworth and all these lockdown defensive guys, the Selman brothers. And all OU did defensively last year was become historically awful, giving up more yards than they ever had before, even more than they did in the final year under Brent Venables. So that proved without a shadow of a doubt it's more than just a coach, kind of players. And OU had no players on defense, no difference makers whatsoever last year on their entire team, much less on defense. Tony Jefferson was probably the closest thing to a good defensive player, and he decides to leave school a year early and go pro. So they really have a lot of work to do there. Their linebackers were non-existent, and in fact, I was told that 18 different linebackers turned down scholarship offers to OU this year. 18 different linebackers said, no thanks. So whether true or not, that's alarming. And again, they were running a different defense, and now they're going to try 3-4, so they've got to do that in the spring. On offense, they've got to come up with a quarterback to replace Landry Jones. So it's probably going to be Blake Bell, but it might be Kendall Thompson. It might be Trevor Knight. Might be Cody Thomas. Who knows whenever he gets here. Point being, all those guys run it way more than Landry Jones ever did. So you've got to put in a run game offense, you know, to help out, to center around the personnel you can have at quarterback. And that's why, and then you've lost your offensive line coaches. It's just this could be, in our estimation, the most pivotal spring session that Bob's ever had in his 14, 15 years at Oklahoma, just for all these questions that have come up, and he's got to have answers for them.
Well, what about some of the commitments and the guys that they inked? I mean, I know this year's class was not loaded with a ton of 4- and 5-star recruits, but are some of these guys going to be able to step in and be immediate difference makers, Bobby?
That's a great question. I would think, and you mentioned him before, Keith Ford is the guy that's getting all the attention, the running back from Cypress, who's, you know, they just haven't been very good at running back in a while. I mean, Damian Williams was okay last year when healthy. I mean, he could break long runs straight, and you know, but he was banged up toward the end of the year. Brennan Clay's a nice player and stuff, but they haven't had this kind of a ballyhooed running back signing since DeMarco Murray coming out of Las Vegas, who, of course, is now with the Dallas Cowboys. So there's a lot of excitement around Keith Ford. Now, they signed a guy named Ross from Jinx last year, and Jinx, Oklahoma, and he was very good in high school, and sat out last year as a redshirt, so they're counting on him perhaps to emerge. But they need a game breaker. They need a difference maker at running back, and we'll see if maybe Trey Millard will actually carry the ball more than 5 times a game in his senior career before he graduates. You know, people have been begging for that for years. Instead of going to the belldozer offense, put the 250-pound bruiser of a fullback in there and see if he can get into the end zone. So, again, another question there. Now, receivers a year ago at this time for Oklahoma were very much in question. And then, as it turns out, the sky opened and two guys just dropped down from the heavens, you know, transfers, Justin Brown from Penn State and Jalen Saunders from Fresno State, and all of a sudden the receivers became a strong point on that team at the end of the year. You had Trey McTwyer coming back, who was supposed to be the guy last year, and he ended up not being a factor whatsoever because of these other guys. But he sat out. He supposedly learned. He improved. He got his head right. So maybe he'll be the impactful receiver this season. But and Sterling Shepard returns. He had an outstanding year. So we'll see. But just, again, way more questions than answers regarding Oklahoma football.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of unknowns as Oklahoma heads into the 2013 season. You were just a moment ago highlighting and talking about the quarterback. You're thinking and anticipating that Blake Bell will be the starting quarterback for Oklahoma. How do you think that's going to evolve as far as the competition with that? You'd rattled off a number of names. And Charles Thompson's son, too, Kendall.
Right, Kendall. I'm not saying it's for sure Blake Bell. Now we'd like to see what Blake Bell can do. We've seen the belldozer, and I think teams caught up to the belldozer last year. I mean, there was, you had red zone offense scoring problems at the end of the year, so that wasn't necessarily a surefire way to get into the end zone. So Bob Stoops has insisted to us for 3 years that Blake Bell can pass it, and did so in high school in Wichita, Kansas. So we're ready to see it. We darn sure know he can run it. He's huge. He's 6'6 and weighs every bit of 260 pounds and can run about a 4.5 40, so that's not the issue, his legs. We know that, but can he throw it? Because say what you will about Landry Jones, Elissa, but he did pass for 16,000 yards and about 120 touchdowns. And,
wow.
And when he was right, he was spectacular. We know that he didn't like pressure, but when you gave him time to throw for 4 years, that guy could throw darts. And that's why I definitely think he's going to get an NFL look, despite people questioning his toughness. So who can throw it? Now, Kendall Thompson, I saw him in the spring 2 years ago. He's been running scout team, very elusive with his feet, and a better passer than you think. He's a lefty, a left-hander, and Oklahoma hasn't had too many of those, except, oh, wait, Josh Heupel, the last time they won the national title.
There you go.
Left-hander, so maybe he's a left-hander. You know, it wouldn't bother me.
Very nice.
And then Trevor Knight from San Antonio, I honestly don't know much about, but people raved about him running the scout team leading up to the bowl game, impersonating one Johnny Manziel. And I'm like, well, he must not have impersonated him quite good enough, because Manziel still got 516 yards against that lousy defense. So we'll see. I hope it's a wide-open competition. It sounds like it's going to be. And I'm not ready to say Blake Bell will be the guy yet, but he will definitely go into the spring as the first-teamer, and it will be his job to lose.
One of our favorites is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, that is Bob Berry Jr. with the Sports Animal out of Oklahoma City. And kind of get us up to date, I understand what Drew Allen, he is looking at the possibility of transferring. Any updates on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Drew's going to go. He's a nice kid, and he never played when he was at Oklahoma. He was the true backup, you know, for 2 years. And then Blake Bell passed him on the depth chart as the backup the last couple of seasons with the emergence of the belldozer. So he'd been running with the third team. It's his third or fourth year in the program, and he's just going to go. I really honestly don't think that makes any impact whatsoever. They're loaded. They're stockpiled at quarterback. It's just a matter of, do they have any experience, and can anybody play as a starter? And you mentioned Cody Thomas. We'll see. I mean, I've heard a lot of great things about him. You know, he might say, wait a minute, you know, don't count me out when he comes in the summer as a true freshman, and he might have something to say about that position.
A four-star player talking about Cody Thomas. Well, let's shift to Avenues. We got Cowboy fans that listen to our program. Give us the latest on with Mike Gundy. I understand what he signed 23 players, and three of them were junior college players.
He did, and probably the most shocking signee of them all was the offensive coordinator picked from Shippensburg University, Division II in Pennsylvania. I mean, I could have guessed from now until the end of time who OSU would hire as their next offensive coordinator, and I wouldn't have come up with the guy from Shippensburg. His name is Mike Yurcich, and he's got 14 years of coaching experience, all on the small college level. He was at Edinburgh College before Shippensburg, and he was a star at one time at the University of California. And I said, oh, really, Cal Berkeley? And they went, no, California, University of California in Pennsylvania or somewhere. So it's all small college. And yet, Elissa, it was pointed out to me the day the guy was hired that, hey, there was another guy that came from D2 to Division I, and it worked out pretty well. Chip Kelly, who was at the University of New Hampshire before he eventually ended up at Oregon, and now he's coaching the Philadelphia Eagles. So I trust in Mike Gundy. His last two offensive coordinators, Dana Holgorsen and Todd Monken, have gone on to head coaching jobs in D1. Yurcich, his team at Shippensburg, again, for what it's worth, Division II, averaged 47 points a game, 530 yards total offense. They supposedly run wide-open spread, crazy stuff. And Mike Gundy was emphatic when he hired the guy and says, we have our system at Oklahoma State. We're just bringing this guy in to learn it and then teach it. So there's not going to be any change in system. They've been prolific the last 3 years on offense at Oklahoma State, starting with Brandon Weeden and Justin Blackman and going on through. So this guy just has to learn the offense, manage it, tweak it his way. But they've been very explosive on that side of the ball. There's no question about it.
Just a few more moments this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with Bob Berry Jr. with you at Sports Animal out of Oklahoma City. And, you know, it seems like the end of every season, Mike Gundy's name does seem to emerge. And do you anticipate that he'll always stay in Stillwater?
I think he probably will now. He was definitely courted by Arkansas and Tennessee this offseason. And a lot of people around Stillwater were taken aback by that and wondering, and actually got mad at Mike. He was receiving some negative publicity. How dare him talk to other schools? Well, I mean, I totally understand it. I mean, you can have your, as he called it, New York Yankees job when he was hired, but, you know, there have been some things. Every coach wants more. Every coach wants more control of the program and more say-so in decisions. And despite great facilities and all kinds of stuff going on, there's still people that, you know, tell Mike Gundy no from time to time. And he wanted some more things in his favor coming that way. So he basically, as the story was told to me, told his agent, Jimmy Sexton, who's very powerful, he said, you can go ahead and dangle my name out there. Let's see what happens. Well, OSU finally came back and said, please don't. And Mike said, well, here's some concerns I have. And supposedly those were addressed by Mike Holder. So he has more control and more success over some stuff. And I think that'll keep him in Stillwater for quite some time. But it was serious there for a while. I mean, I know for a fact Tennessee offered him the job, and Mike was pondering it before he finally came to a re-agreement, if you will, with OSU and decided to stay in Stillwater.
Yeah, last time you were on the program, I think we had talked and discussed a little bit about that. Hey, quickly, as we close out today's interview, give us the pulse on your Oklahoma City Thunder. They've played at a high level all season long, but I want the pulse on Russell Westbrook. It seems like he has difficulty kind of reining in his emotions. I mean, is it just immaturity, or is there someone in his head that's triggering all of this and his inability to control that?
Well, Alyssa, I give you credit. I mean, you were around him on a daily basis for, you know, a couple of years ago in his short NBA career. I just think Russell's a young child when it comes to his emotions, and I think he's a grown man on the basketball court. And, you know, I don't think it's cause for alarm. Now, some national people are trying to say, you know, this recent blow-up we had during the game, he yelled at Tabo Sepulveda and got benched and wouldn't talk to his teammates and stormed off the court. I mean, I personally, if I were the head coach, I would have suspended him a game. I would have gone to him and not screamed and yelled and just said, you're an NBA All-Star. You're one of two leaders on this team that has reached that status. You do not leave the court during a game in a huff. You just don't do that. You want to talk some stuff out, we can later, but you got to be a professional about it. I just think Russell needs to grow up. But I love his game. I love the edge with which he plays. I have no problem when he fires it up there 21, 22, 23 times. People always keep trying, oh, he shoots more than Kevin Durant. Well, the Thunder's winning percentage is better for a fact when Russell Westbrook shoots the ball more than Kevin Durant. That's a fact. Now, he'll have the 5-for-22s or the 6-for-24s, but it's not like that's all he's doing. I mean, go look at those games and see how many assists he has or offensive rebounds, you know, or forced turnovers against the other guys. I mean, he's so stinking athletic, it's not even funny. So I love his game. I don't like his attitude a lot of times, especially toward the media. I mean, I've gotten into it a little bit with him before, too. He just needs to grow up in that area. He got into it the other night with a reporter from Utah.
Yeah, after the Jazz game. Yeah.
And I thought it was a pretty basic question. Hey, did you guys lose that game or did Utah win it? And Russell didn't like that question, and he bolted. But yeah, I just think Sam Presti and those, even Scott Brooks, who was in the league a long time and has been around players forever, big ego guys and good team guys, they'll rein this guy in. But they want to do so with caution. They don't want him to change his game on the court, and I totally get that. So I have no problem with Russell. I just think he needs to grow up.
Are you surprised that Coach Cheeks hasn't been able to help him temper that a bit?
Well, kind of, because Mo was the one that Russell basically shrugged off the other day when he stormed out the court during that game. And Mo is very experienced, too, two-time NBA head coach. But, again, you've got Mo Cheeks, Sam Presti, Scott Brooks, you know, Mark Bryant in the league forever as a coach.
Oh, yeah.
All these guys that have been around, and even Kevin Durant on the court, an all-star. He knows the pressures that Russell goes through and stuff. They all genuinely like him. What humors me is hearing all the hosts on the ESPN shows and the NBA Network and stuff, this will tear the fabric of this team apart. Well, I just don't think so. I think what it is a bunch of young guys that are so competitive. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you played like this when you played at Oklahoma. I mean, they have battles in practice. They have fights in practice. They have arguments. But they're a young team at the end of the day that all comes together to play really good basketball. And I don't think it'll tear the team apart. Now, the only thing you want to watch is down the road. If this continues to carry on and then, say, in the next, 2 or 3 years, there's a new, what's the kid's name at Portland? Lillard Damian Lillard.
Oh, Damian Lillard, yeah.
Or whatever his name. And then the Thunder's kind of fed up with Russell's act and his contract's coming up. They might, you know, at that point, Sam Presti might put pencil to the paper and say, you know what, let's make a move here. Let's launch this guy while he has some value and go get a young up-and-comer and build from there. I mean, he traded away James Harden, for goodness sakes, and there probably wasn't a more popular player on the Thunder team, and everybody in Oklahoma City loved the beard. They wanted to keep him. They were just distraught when he left. But Presti made a very tough financial decision that he had to do, which he probably wouldn't have done if he had the dollars on his side. So he'll do whatever it takes. And if Russell, if his antics get in the way of his all-star performance on the court, hey, everybody's expendable.
Well, Russell Westbrook, a passionate player, always a lot of fun when the Mavs and the Thunder go head-to-head, and watching Russell go against his former college teammate in Darren Collison. Those two get after it.
Yes, they do, and I think Collison hammered him the first time this year.
32 points, yeah.
Absolutely, just lit him up, and I know that went all over Russell. So, but again, I like his competitiveness. I think he's the most athletic point guard maybe I've ever seen. He's way up there. People don't realize how many key offensive rebounds he gets at crucial times.
That's true.
He goes in amongst the trees, and or even tap outs. You know,
three or almost four a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're all big plays. So. And he finishes at the rim absolutely better, as good as anybody in the league, even with the left hand. So I love his game, and he's got a nice outside shot. He just needs to kind of get some of that off-the-court stuff, post-game stuff, figured out, I think.
He is a rim attacker, without a doubt. And we look forward, Bobby, to seeing you down here in Dallas March 17th, okay?
Sounds good, E. Thank you very much.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-545-MYTV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-545-MYTV. Right now to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-545-MYTV. 1-855-545-MYTV. Cancel the cable. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-545-MYTV. 1-855-545-MYTV.
Elissa Walker-Campbell is on the air.
Asking the questions you want to know.
With sports' biggest and best name, Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle.
And one of the ways you get high percentage threes is to get offensive rebounds and toss them back out. And if we don't get those rebounds, they're going to get them and toss them back out.
Now, rebounding is a massively important stat.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We only have time to highlight a couple of players, and one of the young men that I do want to highlight is Darren Collison. He arrives early, he stays late, you see him out on the floor with Coach Armstrong, and just spending time, you know, working on his, you know, attack angle, getting to, you know, keeping his dribble low, refining his free throw shot, and he just has that hunger and that continual thirst to take his game to the next level.
He's gotten better and better, and, we are in the process of trying to develop him into a guy that can be a starting point guard on a good NBA team. Now, he had not done that to this point. He started with New Orleans. They were a lottery team. Then he was basically a backup in Indiana, and they were a playoff team. When he came here, we had some struggles early on, and he had some struggles early on. We brought in Derek Fisher because we didn't feel like it was fair to Darren to put him in this position, to have to be the leader of the team at the point guard position. And then Fish was here for a while, then he was not here. And so now Darren's back in that driver's seat, and he's grown a lot during that period of time. When Fisher was here, he learned a lot from Fisher, even though it was a three-week period about, discipline, approach, the importance of the defensive end, all those kinds of things. And so now Darren's got a great opportunity, with this club, and he did a great job in the Orlando game the other night of, being ready and stepping in and knocking down a big three at a really important time of the game. And, there are going to be more and more of those moments and opportunities, and he'll be ready.
Yeah, we can see how his confidence has really grown, as you talked about, late in that game against Orlando, hitting that three, but also against Oklahoma City to send it into overtime. So you see how he's standing up on the inside. He's getting that confidence. Now, we got to talk about one of our contemporaries, Elton Brand, one of the veterans, the older guys on the team.
Wow, I don't know how he feel about being called one of our contemporaries. Maybe yours.
well, he is coming on very strong in 2013. His offensive game has really come alive. But what I appreciate about him is that he seems to be in the right spot at the right time, and he's making big defensive plays, and that block against Harden against Houston was huge.
Yeah. He's, you know, I can't tell you the kind of respect I have for a guy like him and what he's been through in his career. I mean, he's been one of those guys that is a, you know, he's a hardened veteran. He's been through a lot. He's a multiple All-Star. He's been through a torn Achilles. He's been through some tough times in Philadelphia, issues about conditioning and weight and all these kinds of things. And now, you know, we really wanted him, you know, out of Amnesty. And we were able to get him, you know, for a price that we couldn't believe we got him at. And after some struggles early shooting the ball, you know, his game has really come around. And the thing that I love about him most, he's all about winning. That's all he ever talks about. You know, he's been a perennial starter in this league, and yet in our situation, he's been more than fine with doing anything asked of him, you know, on a game-to-game basis to try to help the team win. And so, you know, he's a guy that you just, you know, when you watch him day to day and how he approaches it, you have this kind of heightened level of respect for him.
You were talking about earlier the Sacramento game, and I remember specifically when that game was winding down, I saw Elton, you know, going up and down the bench, giving the guys high fives, trying to provide that encouragement, and that leadership, you can't put a price tag on.
Look, he's been in the league 13 years, 14 years, whatever it is. He's been in it a long time. And, you know, for our guys, and we have a lot of younger guys on the team this year, and we have some kind of medium-aged guys, you know, Collison and Mayo are both 25. I mean, but they're younger guys, but they've been in it 4 or 5 years now. But when a guy like Elton gets engaged like that, you know, it's very meaningful, and the more of that stuff we can get, the better.
Let's take time to preview the San Antonio game on Friday night. They are prolific from three-point range. I mean, they hit 23-pointers earlier this year. And, you know, when you break down the game tape and you really start trying to figure out where are these threes coming from, they're coming from transition, from dribble penetration, post penetration, and then for the kickout. Talk about the defensive challenge that you have.
Well, you know, the whole thing starts with Parker and, you know, his ability in transition to break it down. Anytime he can get to the rim, he's going to get to the rim, and he's a great finisher. When you take away the rim and he gets lane penetration, you know, that's when teams suck in and then they get the threes, and they have great three-point shooters all around. I mean, the guys standing in the corners are always ready to fire it. You know, they got guys like Bonner coming off the bench. And so, you know, it's just that's the beginning of it. Now, Tim Duncan is having a great year. He's averaging 17 and 10, and he's really been a monstrosity in the post this year, which they haven't had him doing a lot of the last couple of years. And he just he has got an energy to him this year that he hasn't had the last couple of years. So they really have it going. Ginobili, who has been out for some games with a hamstring, I don't know if he'll be back for our game or not, but you know, with those three guys, Parker, Duncan, Ginobili, I mean, that's real star power, and they're all playmakers. So it starts with those guys, and then the problems that those guys cause create a lot of the threes. So the game is about defensively getting back, taking away penetration, all right, and being able to guard them so that the penetration threes aren't there and the penetrations to the rim aren't there. And it's a hard proposition. That's why they're one of the best teams in the league.
You will face a high volume of pick and roll, so verbal communication is going to be very key, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they run, if you count them, I mean, they run anywhere from 65 to 80 pick and rolls per game. And a lot of times they'll run two or three in the same possession. And those are extremely difficult to guard with guys like Parker and Ginobili who, you know, understand the nuance of changing the angle. They can split. You know, they can do all those things. So it's real challenging. But again, right now we need these challenges. We need to rise to them. We need to win games. And so, you know, we're looking forward to that challenge. And, you know, this period before the All-Star break is really big for us.
Rick, how much has the game changed since you were a player? It seemed like it was just about defending inside the paint or guarding your guy on the wing. But now, I mean, we're talking about you're having to defend so many different pick and rolls.
Well, back when I played, very few teams even ran pick and roll. And, back in those days, you know, I played with Larry Bird and Parrish and McHale. They would set a few in, per game, maybe three or four or five at the most. And that was considered a high volume. Since then, and, you know, Detroit started this when Chuck Daly was there, and he had Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars and Vinnie Johnson and Lambeer, who was a great outside shooter as a big. They started running those high pick and rolls where Vinnie would come off, and if you guarded him with two guys, Lambeer would pop, and he would make those shots. And, you know, Detroit was the team that probably revolutionized the game from a pick and roll standpoint. Since then, you know, the game's changed even more because now the defensive rules are such that you can have two guys guarding a ball, a guy that does not have the ball. And back in those days, there were grids on the court, and so everybody kind of had to be within a certain distance of their man. That's not true now. You can play zone now. The only rule is you can't be in the lane for more than 3 seconds defensively without being in a guarding position and touching a man, you know, and so the geometry of the game has changed. Now it's not as easy to come down and isolate every time in the post because you can really crowd and load up on a guy. Movement into random pick and rolls is where the game has really gotten hard to guard. Everybody is doing more of it. The teams that have the better playmakers are going to have an advantage. And so the game has gotten a lot better to watch over this period of 10 years since these rules have been in. The ball goes up and down the court more. There's less holding of the ball, and there's more movement to penetration, and we're seeing a lot more threes. And so that's kind of where the game is at. Now, where it goes from here, you know, I'm not exactly sure. What's kind of happening is big guys are getting a little phased out of the game, which is a bit of an oddity. So I think in the future, you're going to see more big guys that have the ability to shoot the ball to mid-range and even long-range. Guys like Dirk, guys like Chris Kaman. Brand can shoot it out to 18, 19 feet. And, you know, in San Antonio, they got Duncan who can shoot it out to 19. They got guys like Bonner that can stretch it out. Those guys are going to be extremely valuable.
It's nice to have that type of versatility. And as we get ready to wrap up our interview, you played for Rick Pitino for a year at New York. And one of the things that he always does, I'm a big Pitino disciple, I follow him, that he would always read to all of his players. The book is titled The Precious Present by Spencer Johnson. And I'm not sure if he ever read this to you, but compliments of the Big E Sports Show.
Wow.
And as you look ahead to these next, 40 games or so, you got to stay in the present.
Well, that's tremendous. I really appreciate that. And when you go through losing streaks, what happens is you get people give you a lot of books. I recently got Jim O'Brien, one of my assistants, gave me Norman Vincent Peale's book of his favorite quotes. Uh-huh. And the favorite quote that I got out of that was by a guy named Anatole France, who said, "I prefer the folly of enthusiasm to the indifference of wisdom." And that's what our season has been about. It's been tough. It's been trying times. It's been, you know, the tough losses piled up, but we got to maintain our enthusiasm, and we will.
Well, I know as a proud parent, too, it's always good to have some little extra reading material for your young daughter, too, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Listen, blessings to you the remainder of the way, and good luck.
Likewise. Thank you.
Be sure and join us at eradiosports.com for more exclusive interviews.